Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What's going on, everybody? Mike Curlin here of the Bases Loaded Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and I'm stoked to be collaborating with RotoBaller again in 2021, with the Bases Loaded Podcast continuing as part of the RotoBaller Radio Network. Since 2013, RotoBaller has been grinding away, providing millions of fantasy baseball fanatics their fix for in-depth MLB analysis and player news. If you haven't heard, RotoBaller's 2021 MLB Draft Kit is live, and all Bases Loaded Podcast listeners can get 10% off RotoBaller's Draft Kit by using the discount code BASESLOADED. That's Bases Loaded, all one word. RotoBaller is home to number one Fantasy Pros accuracy ranker Nick Mariano. Nick's 2021 rankings and projections are available as part of the RotoBaller Draft Kit, along with printable cheat sheets, our top draft sleepers, more than 300 2021 player outlooks, and all of this fantasy baseball goodness from RotoBaller is available for 10% off with the discount code BASESLOADED. Just go to rotoballer.com/basesloaded and get your draft kit today.
Of course, right after I published the episode, we had some news break in terms of stuff that actually affects lineups. So a couple things I want to update real quick, and then obviously you can fast forward through it as we get through the podcast. But Nico Horner was optioned at past midnight my time. So wanted to make sure we get that out there. It was trending, and every beat reporter was saying it looked like it was Nico Horner's job. And then he gets optioned. So David Bodie and Eric Sogard look like they're making the roster, both of which have done okay in the spring, obviously, both of which actually done pretty good. So fire up your Bodie shares. Unfortunately, Horner is not breaking camp with the team. Same thing with Bradley Zimmer. I actually missed on the Indians, so I guess I'll touch on them real quick. I forgot to talk about the Indians. Basically, long story short, we know the lineup. Top to bottom should be Hernandez. Actually, let me pull that one up real quick because... Again, didn't talk about him. Wasn't planning on talking about him right now, but why not since I'm doing the update, right? So the Indians right now, the Cleveland baseball team, I should say. You have Cesar Hernandez at the top, followed by J-Ram, Eddie Rosario, Franmil. Josh Naylor seems to have earned that job. Jake Bowers has been confirmed as the first baseman, of course, because he has no options left. Bradley had one. That's all this is. Adam Rosario should get more run at center field now because Zimmer was optioned. And it looks like it's going to be a Luplow and Gamble platoon in center. Luplow batting against the lefties, Gamble against the righties. So that's going to happen. But I'd say Ahmed Rosario gets that job sooner than later. Just needs to get some reps in there and really get that fielding under control. Jimenez is going to probably bat ninth. So we just figured that one out as well. Indians, and then, of course, the Twins, I actually forgot to mention. Rooker, that would be my guess of who gets the starting gig. With Kirilloff sent down. And that's another team that, again, we kind of have an idea of what to expect there. We're going to have Max Kepler most likely leading off, followed by Josh Donaldson, Nelson Cruz, Jorge Polanco, Miguel Sano, Byron Buxton, and then probably Garver and Jeffers mixed in there sometimes. And this is a lineup that's going to change a lot. So I wouldn't even put much stock into specific spots, but know that you'll see Kepler towards the top, Donaldson and Cruz towards the top and middle. Polanco can fluctuate between being a leadoff guy or being a four-hole hitter. That's pretty much what you have to expect with him. Rooker's probably going to hit towards the bottom of that lineup, but I do think it's Rooker's job. And one last thing I also mentioned was Moran would be platooning with Frazier, but Frazier opted out of his deal, so that platoon is no longer happening. So apologize. This is a quick little update. Now you can go ahead and give the rest of the show a listen again. Appreciate it and enjoy.
With a
the bases loaded and one out.
Oh, my God.
Deep to right field. Way up there and way out of here. Second deck walk-off home run. Grand slam.
Welcome in, everyone, to episode 149 of the Bases Loaded Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Kurland. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike_Kurland. And we are days, just days away from the start of the season. Sigh of relief, honestly. It's been quite a busy spring. The podcasts have slowed down because I've been so busy with the spring training stuff. But I'm going to try to get out a few last-minute pods because I have a draft the day of and the day before spring training ends. So, or the day before the season, I should say, and the day of, even day of opening day. So I'm going to get out a few last-minute pods, but this one I wanted to get out because we have the first weekend of Fab running for some leagues. We have one of the bigger, if not the biggest, draft weekend of the year coming out this weekend. And what I'm going to do is go through every single team tonight, all 30 teams, discuss their lineup, some of the implications in terms of fantasy production that players might have, depending on where they're slotting the lineup, some trends. And believe it or not, there's still some things on some teams that we have no idea what to expect. So let's just get started. Again, I'm using my lineup tracking tool that I created. It's on my Twitter. You can find all my, it's pinned to my Twitter if you want to follow along, if you want to just check it out. But again, we're going to start with the NL East, and we'll start right at the top with the Braves. The Braves, they've been showing their hand for quite some time. So there's not much to really get into. I mean, you know, you have Acuna at the top, Albies batting second, which has been confirmed essentially again all season, spring training long, he's been doing so. Freeman third, Ozuna fourth, Darno fifth. I guess that's worth discussing just for a moment because we saw how good Darno was in 2020. And regardless of how, I mean, yes, he's going to regress a little bit, but he's still going to bat fifth in this Braves lineup. And that spot is a tremendously valuable spot. I see little reason to doubt Darno in terms of like what he can bring as a fantasy producing catcher, because with the catcher position being as kind of crappy as it is every year, Darno should be all but a sure thing in terms of playing time for that team. And he's just a guy you can depend on. You just slot him in, set it, forget it, move on with your day. Followed after Darno, is Swanson. You know what you're getting there. Riley batting seventh hinders his upside or potential, but we're expecting Riley to take a step forward this year. Again, batting seventh isn't ideal, but you're going to get a guy who's going to hit upwards of 30 home runs, probably get like 90 RBI because the back end of that lineup, maybe 80-ish. But you know, he's going to move up that lineup if he hits well enough. And again, there's injury potential and all that, so you just never know. But, you know, spring, he hasn't really been that great so far. Prior again, and the stats I'm referring to are prior to Friday's games. This is Friday night. I'm recording this, and Friday morning, the stats I pull are from the day before, so they're not updated through Friday's games. But entering Friday's games, he had 8 strikeouts, batting .226, but he has 2 home runs. So we've come to know Riley to be that kind of guy, almost the 3 true outcomes type of guy. I think there's still some batting average, I can't even call it upside with Riley, maybe like .250, .260. But we saw him again take that step forward. The swing and miss he's gotten better at. So hopefully he can get going here as the season gets going, because I know he missed a little bit of time in spring training as well. So that should be something that should hopefully work itself out. Pache is going to be rounding out this team, because remember, this is the NL, so there's a pitcher hitting, unfortunately. But the thing about Pache is he struggled pretty badly in spring. And I'm wondering if Inciarte can start and Pache goes down to the alt site or minor leagues to get a little more seasoning, because batting .172 with 9 strikeouts and 34 plate appearances ain't going to cut it. He has no stolen bases this spring. 1 home run, surprisingly. Sorry, no home runs. I have the wrong stats. He has no home runs, 1 stolen base. So at least he's still, okay, so he did steal a base. I apologize. Pache stole a base, no home runs. And you're not exactly drafting Pache for the power. You're drafting him for the speed. But batting 8th, yes, he'll run there. But you're talking about a loss in plate appearances, like minimal plate appearances, batting 8th. No real path to moving up the lineup, because it would take multiple injuries for that to be a thing. And again, he hasn't performed well in spring. So what about Inciarte? Let's look what he – and I like to reference spring training stats when we're talking about position battles. We talked – and Inciarte came into the season with the idea of trying to fight for center field. But he has performed just as bad, batting .174 – with 1 stolen base, no home runs, like not doing anything with his 27 plate appearances either. Pache's gotten the playing time. he's always in the lineup with what I would call the opening day roster in spring. So I'm going to say that Pache wins the job or won the job, and you just got to temper expectations because not only is he entering it, not only is Pache a rookie, but he has some swing and miss to his game. And yes, the speed will be there, but he could be like a real hindrance on that batting average. Moving over to the Marlins, and you have Corey Dickerson leading off, Starling Marte batting second. And that after those two, it's kind of like it's a mix. Like you're seeing a lot of Aguilar and Duvall, but you're also seeing Cooper slot in there a lot. And I think Cooper's going to get his between playing right field and playing first base just because I think those three are going to just rotate essentially. Well, Cooper's going to rotate in with those other two guys, but Cooper's looked pretty solid this spring as a whole. I mean, he's batting .382 with a .417 OBP, a couple home runs. The one who hasn't looked all that fantastic is Duvall, batting .205. Although he does have three home runs, he's striking out a lot. You know, he's 41 play appearances, has nine strikeouts, batting .205 with a .220 OBP. Like, that's not going to do it. Cooper has outplayed him. I believe Cooper deserves a right field job, but I think Duvall's going to have it, unfortunately. And then you have Brian Anderson, who's just quietly batting fifth every game. Second base is still a mess. Birdie's been the most deserving at this point. But Chisholm, I think if we're talking about the rookies, the young guys, Chisholm's definitely the guy who has earned it between Eason Diaz and Jazz Chisholm. Jazz has hit .273 with a .351 OBP, 11 strikeouts, but the swing and miss is a well-known thing in his game. But he has three home runs and four stolen bases. So fantasy-wise, there's a lot of power speed here, a lot of intrigue. The guy is just super flashy. The tools are super flashy. The guy has good power plus speed. He's going to be just as good a fantasy producer if he's starting every day. The batting average might be a little bit of a hindrance, as we mentioned. Again, it's kind of normal with rookies, but he could be streaky because, again, given the strikeouts for Chisholm, the streakiness might happen, but again, very toolsy. Power, speed. Like, you want that in drafts. You're able to get that late in a Jazz Chisholm. And I think he does have the inside track to the job right now. I think they want to keep Birdie as a super utility type, and Birdie will play plenty. I think he'll play 4 to 5 games a week, bouncing around between shortstop, second, and outfield. And then I guess after those top five, because again, Marte and Dickerson are just kind of boring guys. Marte's fallen in drafts after being a second/third round type of player last year. Starling Marte, that is. He's hitting .306, has three stolen bases. What I'm really encouraged by are the Marlins' willingness to let their players run this spring. I didn't realize that they were so like open to letting their guys run. And that's really encouraging considering stolen bases are so hard to come by. But maybe the Marlins are a good team to target. Let's see what Dickerson's done if he's stolen any bases. Dickerson isn't much of a base stealer. He stole one base this year. Wow, the Marlins are stealing. That could be a part of their game plan. Be mindful. Let's check out Alfaro. Alfaro actually has good speed. Has he stolen bases? No kidding. Even he has a stolen base. All right. You want your stolen bases? Let's check one last guy in Rojas. Miguel Rojas, another guy that's going to play every day for the Marlins, has a stolen base and two home runs. Dude, the Marlins are stealing. Oh, man. I'm really liking this. Wow. Okay. Sorry. I was caught off guard because spring training stats don't matter, right? But seeing stolen bases, that does matter because that shows intent. That shows a team that's probably willing to run. Seeing that stuff is really encouraging because I think I think that's a tell that the Marlins are going to be a little more aggressive on the base paths. I'm liking this a lot. Sorry, excuse the excitement there, the enthusiasm, I should say. Wow. Let's move on to the Mets. And the Mets, again, another team we kind of have an idea of what to expect. Brandon Nimmo is almost exclusively led off, regardless of if it's lefty or righty. That could change, obviously, if he can't hit lefties, because he has a history of struggling against lefties a little bit. So we'll see how that goes. But as of right now, I'd say Brandon Nimmo, another kind of value in leagues, is set to lead off. Lindor, Conforto, Alonso, and Dom Smith, I think those guys will follow in that order. But Dom Smith, because of that glove, man, that glove scares me. We could see him lose a bat to the end of games because of defensive replacements. We could see days off. Hopefully the bat keeps him in, but it's going to be difficult because if there's a fly ball pitcher, I could see Dom Smith being subbed out that day. And it's unfortunate because the dude's bat belongs in the lineup, but Smith is a guy who's a liability in the field. So that's something to watch. He's been falling in drafts a little bit. He's a guy that I still rather just avoid. And it sucks because I think he's going to be a great fantasy producer, or could be. But I also, just the fact that there are potential issues with playing time in terms of defense, and they have the defensive outfielders, you know, the gloves to kind of push them to the side if they had to. That's where the concern comes in for Dom Smith.
McNeil's a guy that, because he's batting sixth, until he moves up, I have little interest. He's a guy that I've always looked at as more of a compiler, great batting average guy, great on-base guy, but he's blocked by a ton of good on-base guys and good, and it's just, he's almost just a product of, like, batting sixth is a product of his environment, so to speak. McNeil's a guy that you know what you're getting. He's a roster stabilizer. I think there's a little untapped power there. I know he kind of made an attempt to add some, but I'm not going to expect much or buy in, to be honest. JD Davis kind of just is what he is at this point. I think he's going to play just about every day, but another guy that between VR, who the glove isn't there, so I don't know why VR would be much of an issue because the bat hasn't been there in spring either. But then you have Guillorme, who defense first type of guy. You've probably seen Guillorme make plays all through spring training, and usually they're on defense. The guy's glove will play. There's a good chance, again, another defensive replacement concern, another guy who's going to get days off so they can get Guillorme's glove in there for like a Marcus Stroman who does, you know, end up inducing a lot of ground balls and such. So something to watch for JD Davis. Unfortunately, my love for him has dwindled. I was a big JD Davis guy last year. The bat would play. Again, the Mets are littered with guys who belong as a DH, but even if they had one, it's not enough for this team. That finishes off the lineup with McCann. He's just a back-end catcher one, high-end catcher two type. I don't know. Not overly exciting, but catcher isn't overly exciting. I think I have him. He's definitely in my top 12, so he's definitely a catcher one for sure. Especially in 15-teamers. He's a catcher one. The position is just ugly. Outside of Real Muto, there's like little flashy upside, although I do like Sean Murphy a lot. Another discussion, we'll get to him later. The Nationals, they showed one lineup recently that Victor Robles hit ninth in, and that was with the pitcher batting eighth. So it allowed them to do the whole double leadoff thing. Robles returned to the leadoff spot today. He has led off every single start except for one this offseason. Soto is dealing with a little bit of an injury. Not sure if that's going to hold him back or keep him down a little bit. Starting Castro is dealing with an injury. Both those guys will slot into like the 2-3 range, and then Castro will slot into the 5 or 6 range when they return. But Robles should lead off. He's done enough, I think, this spring to hold on to that spot, at least entering the season. Now, will that change as the season goes on? Will he move up and down? Probably. It looks like they want to move him around a little bit. They might bat him ninth against righties for a leadoff against lefties. That is a possibility. But I think Robles is going to get the opportunity to hold on to that job full-time, regardless of lefty or righty, at least out the gate. But his performance will dictate where he ends up in that lineup. Other than that, again, you have more of the same, the Trey Turner types, Josh Bell, like all these guys are hitting the middle of lineups, Schwarber, Carter Kieboom is going to bat bottom of the lineup. I don't think he's done much this spring. Let's look him up, actually, because he's been just not what we've hoped for as a prospect. And yeah, even spring, 44 plate appearances, 15 strikeouts, batting 150, no home runs, no nothing, like two doubles and a triple. Man, he's just... I could see Zimmerman playing third base, honestly. It wouldn't surprise me at all because Zimmerman's hitting really well in spring. He's a real likable guy. The clubhouse loves him. The fan base loves him. Zimmerman could be given a little bit of leeway on playing time, maybe at third base, where I think he's played before, too. He's just not the third baseman we would hope. You know, we want Kieboom to work out. It's just hard to see it working out at this point. Next lineup we're talking about is the Phillies. And again, another lineup that we just know what to expect. Not going to spend much time here. Mick Cutchin leading off. Romuto batting second. Harper third. Hoskins fourth. Hoskins is almost forgotten, but you know what you're going to get. 250 batting average, 30-plus home runs, 100 RBI. The dude is just going to do his thing. It should follow by Alec Bohm batting fifth, which Bohm is a guy that he's embracing the RBI role. He's even said it. It's not his game to hit power, so he's not going to try. He's going to just be a polished bat. You might get 20, 25 home runs out of him type of thing, but he's probably going to hit 280 in the process and give you close to 100 RBI. He's going to be solid but boring. He's going to be, again, that roster stabilizer term. He's going to be every bit of it. Might sprinkle in a few steals. We saw him sprinkle in some last year. Maybe he'll give you 5 this year. And then again, you have Gene Segura, Didi Gregorius, known commodities. It's a solid lineup up and down. And at this point, center field, I'm going to give it my best guess and say Haseley gets it. It sounds like they want Haseley to have it. Herrera, who was showing early signs of running with it, slowed down tremendously. And I think it's going to be Haseley who gets it now that since he was able to make a return prior to the start of the season and has had a
decent spring performance, although it is a smaller sample than most. Moving over to the NL Central, this Brewers team is just, I honestly don't even know what to make of it. Kane should bat in the top of the lineup. Wong should lead off, but Kane's going to get regular days off. JBJ is dealing with, I think, a wrist issue at this point. He still hasn't really played in a few days, so I don't know how serious that is or if that's going to cause him his time. Evisel Garcia, he's had a decent spring too. I mean, the guy, let's look him up as well at this point. A lot of this is on the fly, by the way. I really just so much to talk about here. I'm just looking all this stuff up, so please bear with me. But Garcia, batting 300, 317, 550. The strikeouts have been there this spring, but the power has come with it. Three home runs, batting 300 in the process, though, with a 550, like I said, 550 slug. So Garcia will get his bat in that lineup because that lineup is kind of anemic after the top four to five. It's rough. Christian Yelich has been fantastic. I think we all no one should have doubted Yelich bouncing back. He's a guy that I thought was just going to with little doubt in my mind. Too good of a hitter to have struggles like that continue. He's still in his prime. Keston Hira, I've been fading him openly for a while. He has 14 strikeouts through 39 plate appearances. So the strikeouts are very much a problem, but he's turned it around late recently. He's batting 243 and with three home runs and a stolen base, but he's been caught stealing ones. I don't know how much. See, this is like Rougned Odor all over again, and I don't want to pay a fifth round price tag for Rougned Odor. That's all it is. But I think that's the thing. That's his floor. That's Hero's floor. Whereas the ceiling we know could be five categories. So I get it, but I got to see him not have so much swing and miss in his game. That swing and miss is going to cause streakiness too. And we've seen lows and highs this spring already. So we'll see how it carries into the season and all that good stuff. But again, just something to monitor. The Cardinals are kind of just the Cardinals. I mean, losing Bader could move Carlson over, which could throw Edmund in the outfield. But they talk about Justin Williams. They have Lane Thomas. These are NL only type of names. Like to give you an idea, I think I'm in a 30-team league with it's an analyst like best ball dynasty league. I drafted Justin Williams like outside the top 600 or 700 players. So, you know, it's deep and he's hit 267. He has a home run. He has some, you know, eight hits in 90 and 33 plate appearances. I don't know where I got 90 from. Jeez. But yeah, he's been okay. Lane Thomas hasn't really done much either. 212, 12 strikeouts in 36 plate appearances. I got to think that our guy leading the way is either Justin Williams or John Nagowski. He has nine walks to just three strikeouts, batting 393 over 37 plate appearances with a couple home runs. Spring stats only matter when there's a job to be had, and there's a job to be had right now. That's a position to watch. So we'll see how they fill it because, again, they have the options. They even have Austin Dean. Again, they have four outfielders that can play there. It's hard to say which one's going to get it. I would go with Nagowski, or I would give Nagowski, Lane Thomas, and Justin Williams a look if you're really desperate off the waiver wire and only types, but you just never know which one's going to actually run with it. And then you have the fact that, you know, it's Edmund leading off, Goldie, Arenado, DeJong in that order, and then you have Tyler O'Neill. That actually might bat fifth. And then Carlson might bat sixth or seventh. He's been batting seventh, but he has been coming around. So hopefully that's the beginning of things to come for Carlson because the dude is uber talented. Yes, I said uber. I never say that word. Feels weird. But he has two home runs this spring, batting just 250, but with a 333 OBP. So the OBP skills should be there and could lead to him hitting higher in the lineup. But I could see them batting Carlson lower to start just so he can kind of get his legs under him and get going. The Cubs, again, it's a known commodity at this point. Ian Happ's going to lead off. Fantastic. Then we're going to have Wilson Contreras likely batting second because, believe it or not, they really seem to be in on that idea. Rizzo third, Bryant fourth, Peterson fifth, Javier Baez sixth. And I've stressed this all offseason with him batting sixth. That hurts him, especially because Baez is a guy that I hate calling him a compiler, but he's a guy with such streaky tendencies, swing and miss in his game that he needs every at bat possible to maximize his potential value. And Baez is going to lose at bats going from third to in the lineup, you know, batting third, fourth to batting sixth. That's losing lineups. That's losing at bats every game. Even if it's one here, one there, it adds up. One less at bat for him to maximize that profit potential. So Baez is a guy that I've dropped down my board a little bit. Someone I'm not truly all that interested in. He does have tape back this year. So he says he's a guy that needs it, but Javi Baez,
he's had it back for spring, I'd assume. 15 strikeouts, 43 plate appearances, batting 195. Yeah, he's deserving every bit of that six-hole spot that he's, you know, fallen into. Nico Horner should have the job. I'm going to go on and say he has the job. And he has a home run, 3 stolen bases, batting 353 and 405. Prospect pedigree's there for Horner. Speed's there. He could, if he gave you 10 home runs and 15 stolen bases, going as late as he is in drafts, he's an end-game guy. He has second base and shortstop eligibility, I believe, in fantasy. Nico Horner needs to be on your radars entering this final weekend as a guy you target late in drafts to plug into your middle infield spot if you need speed, because the speed is there. It's something he has shown. The power is one thing he hasn't shown, but I think there is 10 home run potential, which that's not flashy, but when it's coming with 10 to 15 or even more stolen bases, that is. So take Nico Horner in drafts in the end game, I would say. Jason Hayward is Jason Hayward at this point. I mean, he showed like he had a return, like a flash, like little, like it just looked like old Jason Hayward last year. I don't know. NL only. I don't even want him. He's going to platoon more than likely. I don't really want him in mixed leagues. So NL only, obviously, the playing time is going to be there on the strong side of a platoon. Batting 7th-ish in the lineup. Yeah, that's about it for him. We know what he is. The Pirates are not sexy. They're not fun. But the top three in that lineup have value considering where you're getting them in drafts. Adam Frazier, since returning from the injury, has been absurdly great, hitting 563 with a 576 OBP with 2 home runs and a stolen base. The dude is just hitting a ton. 18 hits and 33 plate appearances. Like, he's seeing the ball, see ball, hit ball with Adam Frazier right now. And he's going to be leading off for the Pirates. So the at-bats are there. He has Cabrian Hayes batting right behind him, who's also having himself quite an impressive spring. And then, of course, Brian Reynolds behind both of them. Like, I'm sorry, that right there is 3 players, and he's having himself a decent spring as well. 3 players you can get dirt cheap in drafts. Well, sorry, Cabrian Hayes, you're not getting dirt cheap. But 2 of those 3 you are. And people want to, you know, give the Pirates a hard time because they're not a good lineup. Well, they're still going to get at-bats. They're still going to see really weak pitching in the Central. I just drafted Adam Frazier in a league today, and honestly, I'm excited about it. Second base, outfield eligibility, great bench bat, a guy that can fill in for injuries, a guy who's honestly probably going to start for me the first couple games to see if he can roll this hot streak into the regular season. Gotta love that. Gregory Polanco, another guy that people just, like, every year there's always a little hype on him. You're getting him, again, another guy's dirt cheap. 6 walks to just 3 strikeouts. The plate discipline's been there this spring. Yeah, oh, sorry, wrong guy. I lied. That was Jorge Polanco. Gregory Polanco has 3 walks and 7 strikeouts. So the plate discipline for Jorge Polanco makes sense, which, again, we'll revisit with the Twins. But Gregory Polanco, I can't speak apparently, has shown some power. 2 home runs, 1 stolen base. So the power speed stuff, which he has flashed in the past, Polanco has. So what says that we can't see that again? What says we can't see a little bit of power, a little bit of speed? Batting 286, even if it's closer to 260, there's 2015, 2010 upside here. Again, another guy going dirt cheap because the Pirates, there's a Pirate, like, everyone talks about Yankee tax. There's a Pirates discount. You got to take advantage of it. I think Kevin Newman is going to be a thing again. I mean, he looks like he might have the inside track to starting shortstop position. He's crushing it this spring. His stats are stupid. Like, they're stupid good in terms of batting average and OBP and all that. So I'm not going to even bother. They're over 700 to give you an idea. But Kevin Newman was a thing a couple years ago, struggled mightily last year. Another guy that maybe he could be a thing again. You're getting him again free in drafts. The Pirates have parts that could be fantasy relevant at a great discount. Don't write off a team just because they are bad. Doesn't mean you can't have fantasy production from said bad players. Colin Moran is probably the only one I have no interest in because all these other guys are going at discounts. Whereas Moran, and Moran is too, but Moran offers the least amount of upside in my opinion, because I think we've already heard and it's going to happen that there's going to be a platoon there. Moran's going to have the strong side of the platoon with Frazier, not Adam Frazier though, Todd Frazier. So Todd Frazier's going to hit lefties, Moran against righties, but Moran batting 4th, you could do worse, but I'd rather have every guy I just mentioned, Polanco, Reynolds, obviously Hayes, Frazier, Adam Frazier. I'd rather have all those guys, all of them, over Colin Moran. Like, I am out on Colin Moran. He's the one discount I don't want to take on my team because there's other discounts there that I'd rather have. I'm wondering if Dustin Fowler is going to be a thing again. Like, he hasn't really done much this spring, so who knows? But that center field spot is up for grabs. It seems like I'm going to go with Anthony Alford probably getting it, but I'm not even confident about that because Brian Goodwin's been playing there lately. Alford, I don't know anymore. Is Alford going to play left? No, Reynolds is going to play left field. Oh, Alfred's done okay this spring. Nothing flash. I mean, he's hit a couple home runs, hitting 276, but 10 strikeouts in 31 plate appearances. That ain't going to cut it. Goodwin, we've seen him be relevant. He's not hitting, again, another guy who's striking out a lot this spring, 12 and 35 plate appearances. Has given us a little bit of counting stats, but hitting just 226. Alfred is who I'm going to go with like little confidence. It is a mess there in Pittsburgh for the center field spot. I would like to see Oliva go. I think Oliva would offer the most, for fantasy purposes, I think he'd offer the most fantasy upside because the speed is there. But he has done nothing to earn it, so I doubt he breaks camp with the team at this point. Or if he breaks camp, I doubt he starts, I should say. The Reds are getting another team that we just kind of know, so I'm going to run through them. I think Winker is going to be leading off. We've seen him lead off three times this week alone. And if not leading off, he's usually hitting towards the top anyway. And then he's going to be followed by Castellanos, Votto, Moustakas, and Suarez, likely in that order. Or you can see Suarez and Moustakas flip-flop here and there. That wouldn't surprise me because, you know, lefty-righty deal. Senzel should bat right behind all that. Tucker Barnhart. You're going to see Jonathan India. I think he's going to – I project him to win the job at second base and bat eighth or so in that lineup. So, yeah, there's a lot. It's pretty much it there with that team. Again, with no Akiyama, Senzel should get free run. Maybe Aquino can be somewhat relevant as a bench bat slash a platoon side partner for somebody. Tough to say. Tough to see a real path to relevance there for Aquino. And like I said, Tucker Barnhart's going to be a starter. That means Tyler Stevenson's going to be the odd man out there. And yeah, not too much there with Tyler Stevenson. I actually really like Stevenson too. So it bums me out to say that. With the D-backs, it's still kind of a mess. I mean, we have Peralta leading off against lefties, oddly enough, pretty often. But last I checked, Peralta's not a great, like, it's not like he has great splits against lefties. So it might just be to get him reps. I think Calhoun just going to end up being the leadoff guy when he comes back. But until he does, I think Freddy Peralta can very much lead off at times. I just don't understand what they're doing with the whole leadoff against lefties thing, because his career numbers against lefties are worse than his career numbers against righties. He's always hit righties better. So Peralta leading off against lefties might just be to get some playing time in there. But it's happened so often that I'm starting to believe it a little bit. Ketel Marte, obviously top of the lineup guy. We know that. Eduardo Escobar is going to be middle of the lineup. Christian Walker as well. Is Jobel Cabrera weird? I'm not sure what to expect. Will he fall into a platoon with Rojas at second base once Calhoun returns? Rojas should stick to playing most days. Again, at the very least, strong side of platoon. Nick Ahmed should be batting sixth in that lineup somewhere around roughly. Again, not sexy, not flashy, but he's going to play every day, and that matters in deeper leagues. Carson Kelly will bat sixth or seventh as well. Again, it's going to be kind of a mix-up in this lineup. Kelly's a guy, catcher. You know he's going to play enough to be relevant, but it's still – he hasn't shown anything. Like, he had the breakout. He said he refined his approach this year, entering this year, to kind of try to get back to his ways, like his successful ways. But he's been far from successful in spring, batting 158 with 10 strikeouts and 40 plate appearances. Not what we're hoping for. There seems to be a lot of excitement around LeCastro, and I think people are hoping he could be on the strong side of a platoon at the very least, because we know the speed is there and he has good success against right-handed pitching. But again, it's kind of a tight squeeze, again, especially when Calhoun returns. There's some short-term value there. Maybe the first couple weeks you stream him for stolen bases. But then beyond that, where does he play? Left field's going to be taken up by Peralta. Ketel's going to be in center. And then you're going to have right field with Calhoun. Like, that's Castro is going to be the fourth outfield type, and he's going to be someone who fills in the blanks, probably plays three games a week between the three outfield spots, maybe four when guys need extra rest. But it's going to be hard to roster him regularly outside of daily leagues where you can utilize him being in and out and whatnot. The Dodgers are kind of just the Dodgers. Mookie Betts is going to lead off. Corey Seager, Justin Turner. Cody Bellinger's trip back cleanup, that's what he's been trending towards like over the last week or so. And that top four is pretty much set. With Max Muncy batting fifth or sixth, it looks like he'll bat sixth when Will Smith is in the lineup, fifth when he's not. It's minimal in terms of how it affects him. I would say he's going to bat fifth or sixth. Doesn't really matter. Austin Barnes, we'll see plenty of. He'll bat seventh when he's in the lineup, roughly, pushing pretty much either Gavin Lux or Chris Taylor, which whoever's in the lineup any given day, one of those two are going to bat eighth almost every game. So right there, it already becomes like you're already losing value because of where they're playing in the lineup. But I think it's Taylor, and I hate that it might be Taylor, but I think it's going to be Taylor that takes the job, unfortunately. He's played more with these starting lineups. And you look for trends, right? You're looking for things that, and trying to read the tea leaves, trying to really get that just last second edge. I think, obviously, they want Lux to work out. We all want Lux to work out. Lux is a stud, or can be anyway. The idea of Lux is a stud. Chris Taylor has done everything in his power to earn that spot this spring. Four home runs, banged .382 with OBP .462. Yeah, he's had a little bit of strikeouts, 12 and 39 plate appearances, but he's the one, again, getting plate appearances, but he's also getting the reps with the ones more often. And that's the type of stuff I'm looking for when I'm looking at trends. Lux has had similar strikeout issues, 11 in 39 plate appearances, but he's also not even crushing, but he's also hitting very well. Hitting .351, .385, but the slug is just a lowly .459. No home runs, no triples, four doubles though, but he has a caught stealing as well. Regardless, I think Lux has done everything to deserve a shot, but Taylor has outplayed him, providing more production in spring for what that's worth anyway. And they like Taylor. The thing is though, Taylor should be a super utility. They could utilize him anywhere. And you're going to see Ajik Pollock get his days off. You're going to see Cody Bellinger get his days off. Justin Turner get his days off. Although Edwin Rios will probably play the corners more often than not when Muncy and Turner get their days off. I think we see Taylor bounce around from second base to outfield, which will give Lux a few days a week in the field. But I just don't see Taylor as the everyday starter, unfortunately. Lux as the everyday starter, unfortunately. I want to see Lux. Now, will he take the job? Probably. I would say so. Just how long is it going to take for it to get there? How much is Taylor going to have to struggle? Will Taylor struggle? I think there's too many question marks there to take Lux with confidence as a starter. But if you can get him late enough to where he's like your MI or somebody you can stash until we see the playing time being consistent for him, then he's worth it. I know there's a little helium there with Lux. Rightfully so. Prospect pedigree's there. Performance has been there for the most part. Again, hitting well, but not producing much outside of just the hits. And yeah, that's really it with Lux. Again, I want him to succeed. I just don't know what to expect at this point. The Giants, they're, yeah. I don't know what to do here. I think Listella and Yastrzemski are definitely hitting top two. Solano's been hitting third a lot this spring, so I could see Solano sticking to the middle of the lineup, and he's a guy that's been free in drafts. Batting average, you know what he's going to do. Yeah, he seemingly always overperforms, but that's kind of, I guess, like his skill set's almost become that type of thing. After that, after Solano, like you could just assume that you're going to see some Posey in there, some Brandon Belt, Longoria, he made his way back. It's going to be a bunch of platoons. It's going to be a mess. Dubon will be sprinkled in there at multiple positions, kind of utility type. Slater will get his. I don't know, honestly, what to expect this team. It's Gabe Kapler, too. I wish there was more to take from it. And, of course, Slater's done a lot in terms of just producing. He kind of picked up where he left off. Three home runs, two stolen bases, batting .400 in just 22 play appearances. Another guy that we saw last year really flash. Changed his mechanics up a little bit, really did good things, and the injuries hindered him, and he's coming back in spring looking good. He could push his way into a spot. He's a guy I'm really eyeing. The Padres, again, Grisham comes back. He leads off while he's out. It could be Pham. We see Tatis leading off today. We've seen a lot of Pham leading off. That's been with Tatis out of the lineup. But I think Grisham comes back. He's supposed to come back this weekend, and if he makes it back this weekend, I think he'll get enough reps in to just enter the season back in his role. But other than that, again, you have Tatis, who looks like he's healthy, playing shortstop. Machado, those guys are going to be top three. Grisham, Tatis, Machado. Pham's going to bat fourth or fifth most days with Hosmer sprinkled in and Myers around there. Cronenworth is the everyday second baseman, in my opinion. There's no doubts about it in my mind. You see Kim bounce around from shortstop to second. We saw him in left field, I think, once this week, maybe twice. He's a guy that is going to be the super util, the infield guy. You know, you're going to see Hosmer get days off. When Hosmer gets days off, Cronenworth will move to first, allowing Kim to play second. You'll see Kim spell Tatis over there on occasion, giving him a break. He'll play third for Machado as well. So Kim will get his, but he's not going to be a starter. It's Cronenworth's job, and Cronenworth's done well enough in the spring to hold him off. Right now, Campusano and Caratini are splitting catcher reps. We know that's Snell's job when he returns. Profar is strictly the fourth outfielder, in my opinion, because they have Kim for the infield. They're utilizing Profar as the outfielder. He's played outfield every single game since Grisham went out. So right now, Profar is in, but he'll be another guy who plays three to four games a week just by giving Pham days off. Grisham's probably going to start off a little slower, given the coming off injury, and then you also have Myers, and not to mention Pham and Myers have their injury, they're injury prone. They have their histories there. I think Profar's going to get plenty of playing time, just not regularly, at least not right away. The Rockies. I think that's Hampson's job. I'm projecting Hampson as the starter. I don't care what anyone says at this point. Hampson, what they did is they started off Hampson this spring, right? They started playing him pretty much every single day at center field. It was his job. Center field was his. There was no taking it away from him.
The dude was just running with it. This spring, he's hitting 310, 10 strikeouts, but six walks. So the plate discipline isn't terrible. And the 10 strikeouts are almost over 50 plate appearances, 49 plate appearances. So it's actually not as bad as it looks. And he has 4 stolen bases, 0 caught stealing. Very efficient on the base paths. The speed's there. We know that. The power will come, especially in cores, but it's secondary. But stolen base is what we care about. And Hampson looks like he has that job because they gave Hilliard a similar amount of run, it looked like, at one point. And when they did that, I was like, oh man, the Rockies are rocking. And they've given Hilliard more plate appearances, 54. But in 54 plate appearances, we've seen Hilliard strike out 19 times. And yeah, he has the same 4 stolen bases. He actually has a home run. He's very toolsy. But there's so much swing and miss in that game that it's hard for him to – it's hard. Like, the team wants to play him. They want him to work out, but Hilliard just has too many holes in that swing, causing a lot of issues in the batting average department. So although he is toolsy, it comes at the expense of – his plate discipline. And again, I think that leads to him being on the bench. McMahon should bat second. Oh yeah, going back to lineup spots, Hampson's probably gonna hit towards the bottom. McMahon's gonna play second, I believe, with Fuentes playing third base to start the season. I thought Hampson was gonna play second, you know, keeping Hilliard in, but I think they like Fuentes. Fuentes has done well enough to, and I think they like him at third base. So I think Fuentes is gonna get the starting spot at third base as long as Rogers is out. Rogers comes back, he'll slot back in the second, bat the bottom lineup. Fuentes is going to bat like sixth-ish. That's where he's been hitting all spring. Crone, obviously, in the cleanup spot. Or, sorry, Crone's probably going to be batting fifth behind Tapia leading off, McMahon batting second, Story third, Blackman fourth. Crone's crushing it, though, and he'll be batting fifth almost without a doubt in my mind. Again, Fuentes sixth, and then seventh and eighth will be Rogers and Hampson in some order when Rogers returns. But until then, it'll be Oh, sorry, wait. Doesn't make sense? I don't know. No. It wouldn't make sense. It would be Hampson, Rogers and Hampson would bat 6th, 7th, because the 8th is the catcher. So Fuentes would be the odd man out, obviously, assuming he doesn't play himself into that role. Then that's a whole other discussion when Rogers gets back. But I think they want to get Rogers in there every day. I'm over here looking at this lineup like, how can this work? No DH in the NL is really hurting me in terms of trying to figure out this stuff. Let's move over to the AL. The Springer injury really threw me off. I really didn't know, like, first off, I don't think anyone knew it was there. Just say, hey, by the way, grade 2 oblique. That can linger. I like Springer. I think he'll be back sooner than later. But until he is, Semien looks like he's going to be leading off. Biggio batting second. Biggio's going to fall right back to 7th, I would think, as soon as Springer returns. But I think that could also figure itself out because I think whoever hits better between Semien or Biggio could be the one who falls. But Biggio, we know the OBP is there. He has an OBP of 381 this spring while batting 235. That is Biggio. 1 home run to 3 stolen bases. Again, Biggio. We know what he can do. It's just a matter of, does he bat at the top or at the bottom? Because batting at the top, that on-base skill plays a lot better than batting 7th. And although batting 7th might lead him to run just as much because he's going to have to because he doesn't have the big guys behind him, it's also less play appearances for him to get on base because he is a compiler. Biggio is very much a guy that needs the plate appearances to produce the production. It is what it is. Biggio is going to be solid, but if he's 20-20, what type of counting stats are you getting out of him? And where he's going in drafts, it doesn't quite make sense to me. But maybe he earns it because, again, he's being very much himself this spring. If I told you like that was his line, you shouldn't be surprised. The thing about Semien is he hasn't really done anything to hold his own. I mean, he's hit 3 home runs, but he also has 16 strikeouts and 49 plate appearances while batting .233 with an OBP that's not as good as Biggio's. So if you're batting the same batting average as Biggio without the on-base percentage, you could be the one, and you as in Semien could be the one that falls down the lineup over Biggio. You know the middle lineups. Even Montoya's been openly like open about it. He's going to mix those guys up. It's not going to make much of a difference if Vlad's hitting 4th or 6th any day. Gurriel's been hitting 6th the most. I think you'll see Gurriel hitting 6th the most with Vlad and Teoscar hitting 4th and 5th a lot. Rowdy Tellez finds his lefty bat in there a lot as well in the middle of the lineup because it's full of righties. He likes to get the lefty in there. Bichette should bat 3rd most days, so that's going to push some players around as well. It's just going to be forever moving thing going on at the top of the lineup, or in the middle lineup, I should say, with the top being the only thing that I would think is somewhat safe. The Orioles, you have Cedric Mullins leading off. That's kind of a given. I don't think he's hit anywhere else this spring. Actually, I'm almost certain he hasn't. And he's played center field exclusively. Hayes, they want to see in that lineup. They like having Hayes in the corner outfield spot next to Mullins. Mullins and Hayes play really well together. They know they can cover a bunch of field. the defense will keep both those guys in. Hayes's bat is also there, so we should see Hayes in the lineup most days. But then that puts a squeeze on this lineup because you have Mountcastle, who they've played exclusively at left field. Russell Resource says first base, but Mountcastle hasn't played a single rep there in spring. I don't think they're going to suddenly take a guy who they've been literally grooming for left field and say, you know what, we're going to put you at first base without any warning or without any reps in spring. You're a young guy. We want to work you at a position, but we're going to, you know what, Mountcastle, we're going to put you at first. I don't buy that. I think he plays left field or DHs because right now, even today, we saw Michael Franco take first base duties with Mancini out. Rio Ruiz, the third base. I think Ruiz is going to sneak in between first and third base and DH to get his at-bats, but not many. He's a bench guy. Santander and Mountcastle, I think, are going to split reps in the outfield / DH. I think those are the guys that you got to wonder what's going on there. Like, I think they want to get Hayes in that lineup. That puts a squeeze on the outfield positions. But the DH is there. I just think Mancini maybe plays more first base than people were anticipating. People suddenly thought that it was going to be Mancini at DH. I think that's what the common consensus was. Oh, Mancini's going to be the full-time DH. Santander hasn't played in a few days, so I'm really wondering what's going on there. Apparently, there is no injury, according to reports, but he's been taking a lot of at-bats in the backfield. But why in the backfield? The backfield isn't where you need at-bats. You need at-bats. You need game at-bats. You need those at-bats. You need at-bats that matter. Santander's not like a wily veteran. He's a guy that very much could use those at-bats. So I think there's more there than they're telling us, which is cause for concern as well. He's a guy that I'd be a little cautious about in terms of drafting this final weekend. Not that you shouldn't, but obviously there's something going on. Why is he not playing? Don't just say, oh, it's because he has a lot of at-bats in the backfield. That doesn't seem very realistic. That seems kind of like BS, to be honest. The Rays throw their names in a bag and mix them up. This is the hardest lineup to figure out. This one and the Diamondbacks were a little tough, but the Rays are really tough. They've talked about Susugo possibly leading off against righties. But they've shown Susugo and Margot playing a lot at the top of the lineup, which has bumped Meadows down to the three spot, as well as Brandon Lau batting fourth. And like, we could see some format of Rosarena being second, Meadows third, Lau fourth, with one of Susugo or Margot batting first, and then the other one batting fifth. That wouldn't surprise anybody. Yandy Diaz is playing a ton as well. I'm having a hard time with this lineup, though. I just don't know who's playing where and what, honestly. It's kind of a mess. I'm kind of having a hard time guessing where they're going to do what they're going to do with this lineup, and that's kind of the Rays' MO. They platoon, they move players around. That's all you can kind of expect. But I do like Margot and Susugo towards the top. I know Margot's hit pretty well. Susugo, let's see how he's been. Not great. Maybe they're just seeing what they have there. But if I had to guess, I think Margot would get the chance at the top of the lineup of the two if they actually are going to put one up there. Margot's one stealing bases, batting .387 with a .459 OBP this spring over 37 spring at-bats. That's going to play at the top of the lineup compared to Susugo's like .200 batting average, whatever it was when I looked it up just now. So, yeah. Susugo is just, he's almost like the G-Man Choi without G-Man Choi being there type of thing. But he hasn't performed, so I don't see how they would have confidence to put him at the top of that lineup. The Red Sox are very much a lineup that we have a pretty, like, they've been very, Cora's been pretty open with that lineup, how it's going to roll out. Enrique Hernandez continues to be a value in drafts. I don't care if you'd like him. He's going, like, outside the top 400, maybe higher now, but he should lead off for this team. He's going to lead off. He's led off all spring. Cora has given him pretty much the like, you're going to do it, the confidence. He's all in on it, you know? And why wouldn't you just want the leadoff hitter for the Red Sox? He has 9 walks to 7 strikeouts. That type of plate discipline will play as a leadoff hitter, batting .308 with a .449 OBP. Only 1 home run, 4 doubles, but again, you want a guy who gets on base. He's doing that. So even if it doesn't stick long-term, we know in the short-term he's going to play every day at second base. He's going to lead off for the Red Sox. And if you're leading off in a lineup that has Alex Verdugo batting second, JD Martinez batting fourth, Xander Bogaerts batting fifth, and Rafael Devers batting, sorry, I said that wrong. Verdugo batting second, Martinez third, Bogaerts fourth, Devers fifth. That is following Hernandez. Hernandez is going to see a bunch of pitches, and if he doesn't get his pitch, he will walk. He's obviously willing to take a walk. He'll get on base, and he will score 100 runs if he can stick that leadoff spot. You're getting a guy with multi-positional eligibility between second and outfield. As late as you're getting him in this lineup, that is obviously being overlooked, I think, by a lot of people, count me in. And another guy that I'm falling for again, I'm a sucker for, Hunter Renfroe. People love Bobby Dalbec. Bobby Dalbec's batting 9th. Corey even said he's going to be a good 9-hole hitter. I don't see how a guy who's going to bat .250 or .240 but smack .30 is going to be a good nine spot hitter. I think Dahlbeck could work his way up to sixth, but what we want out of Dahlbeck, we've seen out of Renfroe. I think Renfroe is that guy. You know, he's going to hit 230, 240 with 30 plus home runs, but the difference with Renfroe and Dahlbeck, Renfroe is going to be batting sixth in this lineup, batting sixth behind those names I mentioned with Bogarts, Devers, Martinez, etc. That's a lot of RBI opportunity. Now, it depends how he hits, if he holds it, and we could easily see Renfroe and Dahlbeck switch spots, obviously. But until that happens, give me Renfroe on the discount. Like, he's going outside the top 400. I'll take that all day for late power, because you just need to grab that late sometimes, because if you prioritize speed and batting average elsewhere, Renfroe's a great guy to kind of plug in and see what he offers. We mentioned Dahlbeck. He's going to be batting ninth. We know the power upside's there. We also know the swing and miss is there. The dude's crushing spring home runs, but he's also swinging and missing plenty as well. It's a scary profile. It's almost like, it reminds me of Chris Davis for the Orioles, that year where he led the league in home runs and led the league in strikeouts. That is a very possible outcome for Bobby Dahlbeck, which is a weirdly scary but interesting. And I kind of want to share, but I don't have any, because the skill set's just never been something. It's just kind of something that I don't like to target. The Yankees, we know this lineup. There's no secrets. We have DJ LeMahieu, Aaron Judge, Aaron Hicks, Stanton, Voit, Torres, Urshela, Frazier, and Gary Sanchez. We'll see Gary Sanchez somewhere in there in eighth, ninth, seventh. Maybe Urshela falls. Maybe Frazier bats ninth. This is a stacked lineup from top to bottom. There's no way around it. It just is what it is. That's pretty much it. There's not much to add here. We know what to expect. Hicks batting third is sneaky valuable. He's not going to hit for a great batting average, but he can give you 20 home runs, 10 stolen bases, and obviously 100 RBIs and 100 runs if he actually stays healthy. It's a big if with Aaron Hicks. He's known for getting injured, but if he doesn't, you're talking about huge profit potential there. I don't have any shares myself because the health always does scare me off with Aaron Hicks, but I might have some FOMO there. I might have missed out, and that's kind of upsetting. The Royals, another lineup that we've just known about for a while. Whit Merrifield leading off, Benintendi second, Mondesi third, Sal Perez fourth, Carlos Santana fifth, Jorge Soler sixth, Hunter Dozier seventh, Michael A. Taylor eighth, and insert outfielder Kyle Isbell or Gerard Dyson ninth. Like, oh, Dyson, is that really going to be a thing? If Dyson does in fact stick in this type of lineup, or I don't see it happening, but if he did, there's some stolen bases there, and that's it. It looks like they're going to keep Witt at second, though. They've been playing Witt at second almost exclusively, at least over the last week they have, which is pretty much made me wonder, like, what's going on with this? Like, are they going to bring up Edward Olivares? That's the kind of the name that I want to see up, because they obviously, if Nicky Lopez isn't playing second base, he's not going to play shortstop unless Mondesi's out. This leaves a hole in their nine spot that could be filled by Nicky Lopez or a different outfielder or Hanser Alberto. So it's not really a spot I want any part of anyway, but I do like Michael A. Taylor. He's being overlooked. I don't think we've seen much from Taylor in terms of like batting average, but we know he's flat. Like skills wise, he's power and speed. In 2017, he played 118 games, hit 19 home runs, stole 17 bases. 2018, played 134 games. The home runs declined to just six, stole 24 bases. But so, yeah, my point is although it's not flashy, not sexy in terms of batting average, we know he can give you a little bit of power, a little bit of speed, and that's a skill set we like to take on late. He should be playing every day. How's he looked in spring? I probably haven't looked him up once, because he's just a guy that I actually have a good round of shares of in deeper formats. He's a guy I just fall back on because outfield's deep, and he's a guy like I usually end up putting on my bench. And Taylor this spring is batting 406, holy crap, with two stolen bases. Unfortunately, it was two caught stealing instead of two stolen bases. So that's a little unfortunate. But other than that, yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, he's crushing it this spring otherwise. So we'll see what happens. I think he'll still run, or he'll get the chance to run batting eighth or ninth. I don't know where he's gonna bat. Having him as a double leadoff almost makes sense. But Taylor seventh. Also, or no, Taylor probably gonna be about eighth behind Dozier, which again, not much protection for Dozier, but it's at least something, because at least Michael Taylor is somewhat of a threat with the bat, whereas Nicky Lopez is not, whereas Kyle Isbell isn't much either. On to the Tigers, where you're gonna see Grossman lead off 90% of the time, 99% of the time. We've saw him move down against some lefties lately, not sure how realistic that is, but with Victor Reyes being a good lefty hitter, with, I guess, Jacoby Jones potentially moving up against lefties, that could push Grossman down. That's fine. You're talking about a guy who's still going late enough in drafts that there's value there regardless. And this is Robbie Grossman I'm talking about. And there's value there regardless of if he's leading off 90% of the time or 100% of the time. So yeah, it's really almost irrelevant. Cavallaro should bat top of the order, followed by Willie Castro somewhere in there, and Jonathan Scope. Those two are going to be bat 3 and 5 in some order, I think. And then Miguel Cabrera is going to sneak in between them, obviously. Mazzara is going to have the strong side of a platoon. Again, going back to Victor Reyes, I think Mazzara is the guy who's going to bat 6 or 7 in that lineup, have a good amount of run. Wilson Ramos, obviously the catcher, he's going to be batting 7th or so in that lineup. Jacoby Jones likely batting 9th most days. And then I think it's like, do we see Nico Goodrum? Do we see Isaac Paredes? Harold Castro? I think we see a little bit of mix and match in there. Although, again, it all depends on if Scope's going to play 2nd, Cavallaro plays 3rd, and Miggy actually DHs. In which case, someone's got to play 1st, right? Like, something's got to give. We'll see what happens. That spot's kind of just up for grabs, it looks like. Although, Renato Nunez is still a thing. Nunez will play more first base than DH, and that's going to kind of squeeze that last spot. So, yeah, never mind. Scratch some of the stuff I said. I would say Renato Nunez takes that final spot in the starting lineup, with Nico Goodrum being more of a super util type. And yes, Victor Reyes is going to be kind of the 4th outfielder / platoon partner, I believe, to Mazzara. But I do see, again, Nunez is a guy that just people forgetting about. He's just a big power bat going super late in drafts. I don't know if he's mixed league relevant, but he's definitely AL only. You know you're going to get stats out of him. He should play most days. He was not on roster invitee, but I don't know, just boring. He's like a poor man's Bobby Dalbec, basically. We saw him put up 31 home runs in 2019, 12 in 2020 in a shortened season, which would have been similar pace. I mean, strikeouts a bit, hits about 250, 244 and 256 last 2 years. So Nunez is a guy, again, a poor man's Bobby Dalbec. That skill set isn't, that goes back to why I don't really target Bobby Dalbec. The skill set isn't sexy to me. We could find it in Renato Nunez like 100 or so picks later, with obviously Dalbec's ceiling is way higher, but batting 9th, it's not that much higher. So we have to see Dalbec move up. And even if he moves up, it would take an injury or underperformance by Hunter Renfro, which we've seen before. I just think it's one of those things, whereas Nunez will probably be batting closer to 6th or 7th. So a few extra at-bats every game. I don't know. I still think Dalbec will outproduce him, obviously. I just, again, poor man's Bobby Dalbec. That's like, it's not sexy, not flashy, but it'll do. The White Sox are interesting. Tim Anderson should be leading off. Eloy Jimenez, unfortunately, out for pretty much the year. I'm going to say now that puts Grandal batting 5th. If I had to guess, they've mentioned Eaton batting 2nd a ton. I do think Eaton ends up batting 2nd now, with Grandal kind of having a home in the middle of that lineup instead of being stuck 6th. I think they wanted to maybe move Grandal in and out of batting 2nd. Now Grandal should bat 2nd because I really don't want Eaton to bat 2nd, but Eaton probably going to be batting 2nd more times than not, which pushes Grandal to 5th and Luis Robert likely hitting 6th or 7th, with Andrew Vaughn mixing in there somewhere as well. That's where I'm not sure what they're going to do. Are they going to put Vaughn in the outfield? I think they could still sign somebody like a Jay Bruce or something once he's available from the Yankees. That makes sense. Puig is still a free agent. His name has been floated out there. I don't know if that's more in fantasy circles. I wouldn't draft Puig at this point. I would not think at all that he's going to get signed. There's no reason for that belief. And if I had to pick someone who's actually going to be playing left field, it's going to be Lori Garcia or Scott Engel. But I believe Engel is injured. Scott Engel. That's a roto baller guy. Adam Engel, not Scott. Scott's good people, but Adam's the one I'm talking about. Yeah, it looks like he's injured right now. So I would say Lori Garcia's, that's his job to run with. Not a sexy name. AL only type. Deep mixed leagues, like 50 team drafting holds. Because Garcia can bounce around and get multi-position eligibility by the end of the year if he doesn't already have it. But we'll see. I think they signed somebody, honestly. I don't think they go into this, or they might go into the season with a Lori Garcia, but I do think they end up bringing somebody else in because it's leaving them kind of like right now. Nick Williams would be like their backup off the bench to play the outfield. And I think they want to keep Lori Garcia in that 4th outfielder role instead of having him as a starter every day. I could be wrong. They played Andrew Vaughn in the outfield today because the White Sox didn't learn their lesson about putting a player who shouldn't be in the outfield in the outfield. So they double down on their stupidity. That's always fun. Way to go, White Sox. The Angels are just the Angels. I mean, David Fletcher's going to lead off. Otani lately has been hitting leadoff or 2nd. And that makes me question, where's Jared Walsh going to hit? Because we see Jared Walsh at 2nd, but only in lineups where Otani's out. So when Otani comes in and plays DH, Walsh has honestly sat majority of the time.
in favor of Albert Pujols, who's out hitting him in spring. Spring training stats don't matter. I've said it five times or so this show, but do they not matter when a guy who has an overall track record in the pros is struggling in spring and a guy with a Hall of Fame career track record is hitting well, looks crazy slow on the base paths, shouldn't be running much, looks like it hurts him to run, Pujols, but he's performing well. Will that push Walsh for playing time out the gates? Will Walsh bat? If Walsh is in, though, he should bat top five because that lefty bat, they want to get mixed in there. But Otani's batting second right now. There's no way you're going to suddenly say, oh, you know what? Let's move Otani to fourth, Rendon to fifth in favor of Jared Walsh, who's not doing anything. I don't see. I can see Walsh hitting fifth, though. I can see Walsh hitting fifth or sixth. I just think Pujols might eat into his playing time more than we like, at least, again, as long as Pujols is swinging a good bat. Upton is swinging a blazing hot bat. He's going to be batting fifth, almost certainly behind Mike Trout and Rendon. And I think Trout's going to stick to three. Part of that you'll see if you are reading my article, you'll see that Trout has been pretty much said to be hitting third. Madden wants him there. There was a quote from Madden again in the article. I skipped the quotes today because this was going to be a longer podcast because we had so much to cover. So yeah, that's the middle of that lineup. So Trout's probably going to be hitting third. Got to love that. Back end of this roster, this lineup, Max Stassi, I forget how to pronounce it. I apologize. He's going to be the majority of the time catcher, but you know, Kurt Suzuki's going to split a good amount of time with him. Jose Iglesias is just a guy, but if you're looking for some cheap speed, you know he's going to play just about every day because that defense, that glove's going to keep him in the lineup on the field. We've seen him steal 15 bases as recent as 2018, six in 2019, none last year, but he did hit 373 and then 288 the year before, so he could bring a little bit of batting average there. Some speed, like he's not sexy, not flashy, but he's a guy you can put on your bench in your deepest of leagues. Again, all these players are just guys, but you're telling me I think Jose Iglesias is going to play 145 plus in terms of games. You're going to tell me he can't give me 10 to 15 steals and hit 260, 270 in the process? Career 278 hitter. I'm going to take my chances. And again, the deepest of formats, he might only give you 5 to 7 home runs. He hit 10 or 11 in 2019, but that was the juice ball, and that was in Cincinnati. So I wouldn't bet on that. I wouldn't bet on double digits, honestly, but I think double digit steals is very fair and very realistic. It looks like Miles Straw was replaced as the leadoff guy. I don't know why, though. I do know why. This team is loaded, the Astros. But Straw has earned it. He's struck out just 7 times in 44 plate appearances, batting 310, 341 OBP, 3 stolen bases to 1 caught stealing. That's kind of awesome. And we know he could be a good leadoff guy. At least he's showing it in spring. This was supposed to be his job to lose. They've given it to Altuve, who hasn't exactly earned it. Altuve, just a 308 on base, 9 strikeouts to 5 walks, over 52 plate appearances, batting just 217, a couple home runs, no stolen bases, not even active on the base paths, it looks like. The speed, he had a triple, so obviously there's still some speed there, but he's never been, like, he hasn't been a big base stealer in a couple of years. I shouldn't say he's never been. He used to be a great base stealer. But it looks like Altuve's going to be leading off. And against right-handed pitching, they're going to go Altuve, Brantley, Bregman, Tucker, Correa, Alvarez batting sixth, Gurriel, Straw, Castro, or Maldonado. They've put that lineup out for 2 straight right-handed pitchers. And against lefties, you see Jordan move up, which is odd because he's a lefty. I don't know. Maybe that's just, I don't know. Maybe they were just toying with things there. I don't know. I think there's a real chance, though, that Jordan Alvarez is a 6 spot hitter entering the year, or Kyle Tucker. I can see those 2 flip-flopping, to be honest. But it's to be determined. It's a loaded lineup regardless. Doesn't really matter. Between 4 and 6, you're going to be in a lot of RBI opportunities. You're going to be getting a lot of pitches. You're going to get a lot of at-bats. The only person that's really affected by this lineup right now is Miles Straw moving to 8th instead of leading off. He'll still steal bases. He's still going to play every day. That still has value for sure. But even though Straw isn't leading off, again, he'll have his value. Altuve, though, Baker has been quoted as saying, it's still a work in progress, but I'm leaning towards Altuve. That's a direct quote. So, and we're seeing that. We've seen that trend take place. Let's move on over to the Athletics, where Mark Canha has to be a leadoff guy. The guy, he has led off his last nine spring training starts in a total of 12 out of 15 overall. He has led off. In terms of out of the 15 starts he's played, Mark Canha has led off 12 of them. Yeah, I would say he's a leadoff guy. And his on-base rate, even though he struggled a bit this spring, his on-base percentage is over 340. So that's a guy that you know belongs as a like top of lineup type of guy. Elvis Andrews has found himself batting second almost every time there's a lefty on the mound. I think he bats second against lefties. Ramon Laureano, I don't know what to think. I think he's going to bat second with righties on, but never bat lower than fifth.
That's a guy that I expect to be hitting in top of the lineup, top to middle lineup all year long. Ramon Laureano's due for bounce back. He's having a strong spring. I can't believe I'm saying this name, but Jed Lowry. He's played so much. I think he might be winning the second base job over Tony Kemp, or might be in a platoon. I think Kemp might be the short side platoon to Jed Lowry. And that, can Lowry be a thing? Like, obviously AL only, where you're looking for at bats, Lowry might just get them. Like, I know that's crazy to say. And he actually hits better against lefties and righties, so I don't know why he would be in a short side platoon or a strong side platoon. But it's just weird because they've really been playing Lowry a lot at second base. And when you see something like that, you take notice because it's Jed Lowry. And I thought it was kind of fun. I thought it was kind of funny. Like, oh, he's back with A's or whatever. But yeah, he's doing it. And Kemp in his career has batted better against righties as well. So that platoon makes sense if Kemp was on the strong side, Lowry on the weak side. But Kemp hasn't been a great hitter overall. He's batting a career 237 against righties. That's not going to keep Lowry from taking at bats against righties, especially when Lowry has a career. What was it? Jed Lowry had a career. Oh, it's still looking at Tony Kemp stuff. Sorry. One second. Let's pull up Jed Lowry again. I think it was over 235, though. That's the thing. It's like Jed Lowry might not be great as good. Like, he might be better against lefties, but his righty splits were better than Tony Kemp's righty splits. Yeah, career 255 hitter against righties. That's going to play. And it's a, and well, it's a career 104 WRC plus against righties, career 110 WRC plus against lefties. They might want to see what they can do. They can get out of Lowry. One last hurrah, 36-year-old Jed Lowry, because it's the A's and they small ball, money ball, everything. That's just what they do. And Lowry hasn't done much this spring, but he also only has 31 plate appearances and he hasn't played baseball in what, 2 years? I'm surprised, to be honest, that they're giving him such a long look. I thought it was Kemp's job. I guess it's not. Or maybe it is. I don't know. Kemp has not looked anything special. His OBP has been great, but kind of it's Tony Kemp. We almost know what to expect here. So we'll see what happens there. I think Jed Lowry is going to factor, though, oddly enough. Like, that's just, it's weird to me, but I think that is what it is. Mitch Haniger and is the leadoff guy. I sound so disinterested at this point, right? Mitch Haniger is the leadoff guy for the Mariners. I would say so. He's been leading off almost exclusively for what, 12? I think his last 12 starts, spring training starts, Haniger has let off, just to give you an idea. And Ty France has hit, going back now, five or six straight, I believe. I can't speak tonight. Ty France has let off in each of his last six spring training starts. That goes to show me that I think that's going to be the 1-2 entering the year. I think we see Mitch Haniger leading off, Ty France batting second. And then it gets to Kyle Seager, Kyle Lewis about fourth. Dylan Moore is going to be batting fifth or sixth, depending on what they do with Tom Murphy. Evan White will bat sixth or seventh, again, depending on Tom Murphy. I think Trammell has the inside track to playing right field over Fraley. So you'll see Trammell batting towards the bottom of the lineup, T.P. Crawford batting towards the bottom of the lineup as well. However, right now, Kyle Lewis has been held out for his fourth straight game. Apparently, they're not saying it's serious. They keep calling it minor, precautionary even. But his recovery has been slower than expected so far. And as of right now, nothing serious has been said. And he shouldn't miss opening day, Kyle Lewis, that is. But if he does, Taylor Trammell will probably break camp as the center fielder, giving Drake Fraley more playing time and left as Kelnick, gets more seasoning in the minors or alt camp work, you know, because that's what he needs. That's obviously sarcasm. It's ridiculous. Kelnick should be breaking camp with this team. But what are you going to do? They're gaming the system. Congratulations, Mariners. You suck. Home stretch. The Rangers, the final team of the 30. Yeah, this team is interesting. Not exactly sure what to expect. I think Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is going to lead off. David Dahl is going to bat second. And then after that, it just gets interesting. Against lefties, you'll see Nick Solak move up to fourth or third or second. Like, he'll hit towards the top of that lineup against lefties because they've shown moving up against lefties, moving down against righties. He's never hit lower than sixth, I believe, this spring. So that's where he should probably stick entering the year. Gallo's going to bat third, though, most of the time. But who's going to bat fourth? That's tough to say. I've seen Rougned Odor bat fourth. I've seen, again, we mentioned Solak. We've seen Ronald Guzman hit really well this spring. Does he get a chance to hit cleanup? Kind of, I don't know. Nate Lowe hasn't done anything to deserve the playing time, to be honest. So, you know, he's not only is he not playing Not only is he not going to probably play every day at first base to start, he's also not going to be batting in the middle of the lineup. Is there even a chance he hits the bench to start? Possibly. I just don't know what to do with Nate Lowe. I'm not sure if he's a DH guy. He's not a guy I'm drafting at all. I'm letting everybody else have him. I just don't. Maybe the Rays knew this was kind of what to expect, so that's why they traded him. Who knows? I thought it was going to be free Nate Lowe season, and honestly, it's been a void Nate Lowe season for me, and that pains me to say. It really does. Trevino should be the catcher for what it's worth. I think Jonah Heim will get plenty of reps, though. Maybe even take the spot. So Jonah Heim's the guy I'm getting in the deepest of leagues as my backup, like reserve round catcher for my two catcher leagues and DCs and stuff. I'm getting a lot of Heim. But yeah, like I said, Brock Holt, he's a thing. He's very much a thing. He's been playing pretty often of late, probably to get some reps because they want to see what they have there. He hasn't really done much to really stand out. He has 3 stolen bases, though. So if we can find his way into playing time, Brock Holt could be relevant because the Rangers were one of the better teams in terms of stolen bases last year. They like to steal bases a lot. And you got to think that they're going to bring that same type of concept into 2021, where they are going to be a team that's probably going to need to run again to manufacture runs. So Brock Holt showing that he's willing to run in spring, they're allowing him to run in spring. 3 stolen bases, hasn't been caught a single time. That's a good thing. We want stolen bases. This is an AL only type of play, but honestly, you could probably get him in the 50th round of your DC, maybe the 49th now that I've mentioned him. But I'm in one final DC. Doubt there's much of those happening right now, unless they're express DCs, in which case, again, grab Holt late. I think there's a path to playing time there, especially while Nate Lowe is struggling, because Nate Lowe could just find himself in and out of the lineup. You see Brock Holt bouncing around, give me some eligibility, some help on the roster that direction. I don't know. He's like a scrappy player, man. I just root for Brock Holt. I think what it is. Eli White is sneaky too. I mean, we've heard, you know, the rumors of White possibly taking over for Tavares. He's outplayed him this spring, showing a little bit of power, a little bit of speed, good batting average, just outplaying Tavares. So maybe Tavares' leash is a little shorter. Maybe Eli White gets some looks to see what they have there before they give up on him. Just something to monitor. I think Tavares is still the starter, but he's gonna be batting ninth anyway in that lineup. He's not gonna be batting first. IKF is taking over that spot and running with it. Dahl's taking the second spot and pretty much running with it. Then you have Gallo, and again, then it gets kind of murky in the middle after Gallo. We know the top three, and after that, it's like throw names at a board and hope something sticks, right? Unfortunately, the Rangers, just that's what they are. I've been trying to be optimistic. I've been trying to find things to like, and it's just hard to, so I'm not going to force it. But that's going to do it. We went through all 30 teams right before the draft weekend. It's a crazy busy weekend. I know I'm hoping this podcast really helps you because I touch on a lot of names that a lot of you guys playing in deeper leagues are going to obviously want to know about, talk about, and maybe target now. The lineup stuff has been tremendously successful this offseason. I've been so surprised and very, very thankful for the reception of all this content. Thank you so much for the continued, you know, support. In season, we're transitioning to in season now. In season, these podcasts are going to be coming once a week, right? Probably just like tonight, Friday night, Saturday morning, Sunday morning, you'll get them before Fab. This week, I wanted to get out before draft season and Fab because we do a Fab this weekend. This podcast has worked around that. Talking about movers up and down lineups, talking about hot streaks, cold streaks, guys to just target. I'm going to start incorporating who to target on Fab every week in this podcast as well. Because now that we're going into season, today I just wanted to go through every week. I won't have to talk about every team because every week there won't be something to talk about on every team. So that's why I'm going to incorporate more waiver wire talk, more Fab targets and such every week in this podcast as we get away from having so much to monitor. But again, I appreciate the support. Check me out on Twitter at Mike_Kurland. If you haven't checked out the spring training lineup tracker, you can find it on my page. It's pinned. It's going to be ending in spring training, but the content won't. I do a weekly article, which you can check out on rotoballer.com, or again, just follow me on Twitter. You'll see it. I post it every week. It's pretty much taking this podcast and putting it on paper, giving you something to physically have in your hands or on your computer screen, I should say, and be able to look at that info and make the moves necessary, because it's essentially going to be giving you like numbers and everything I say out loud on paper. I appreciate it again. I really do. It's been tremendous seeing the reception, everything I'm doing. I just can't thank you guys enough. All of you, everybody. It's been just incredible. So appreciate listening as always, and we'll talk next week.